Hi, folks. Namu myoho renge kyo namu. Okay. I have been thinking a lot. Chanting, meditating, and actually, this particular subject has come up several times over the last few years. Whenever these activities happen throughout the world with what appear to be Buddhist monks doing exceptionally strange behavior. And I've answered these questions in some way, in the best way I could, on the online forums like Quora. I may have been asked on the video channel, I'm not sure. Like I said, these questions pop up from time to time. And just recently, I've been reading a fairly new book by Steven Tyser and Jacqueline I. Stone called Readings of the Lotus Sutra, this book. And I like Jacqueline Stone. She's a very good historian, very perspicacious. She just doesn't just say outlandish things. She's a very reasoned scholar. I don't know how I feel about James A. Benn or Jan Mattye. Natier, Natier and specifically, I think is guilty of something that the Buddha himself or Shakyamuni Buddha himself really spent a lot of time beating his students over the head with, and she's making the same mistake. And the reason I bring that up is because it's very pertinent to this discussion about this heinous practice of monks ingesting incense and oils and wrapping themselves with oil-soaked rags and chanting or reciting a sutra while they burn themselves in public. Oh my, that is such an aberration of what the Buddhist teachings are all about that I can hardly wrap my head around it. But the interesting thing is as many times as I've confronted that question about why, this scholar, this particular scholar, James A. Benn, wrote an entire essay on self-immolation, and the source being the Lotus Sutra. So I thought, well, I'm a Mahayana Buddhist, I'm of the Lotus school. I teach all around the Lotus Sutra leading up to it, and I'm about to get into a chapter by chapter reading of the Innumerable Meanings Sutra leading into the Lotus Sutra and the exit of the Lotus Sutra through the closing sutra, the meditation on the Bodhisattva universal value. And so I was very curious as I read this. And to be honest, I'm not even done with it, but I've read enough of it to know, to understand the source that he's pointing out, the people that he's pointing out. And so I don't want to make a, as I said, I'm going to be reading chapter to chapter out of the Lotus Sutra, so we're going to go through this again. But my focus in just this hopefully short video, is to just answer this question. For those of you, not all of you really may care to know about this, but it's an important fact in Buddhist practice history of some 2,600 years that somehow there's a sect of practice that adheres to this kind of thinking, and it's very important, I think, for any Buddhist who cares about Buddhist practice and its goals, that we understand the teachings correctly and be warned about misinterpretation, misreading, and not following actually the guidelines of Shakyamuni Buddha himself. Shakyamuni went to great lengths, and if you want to see how great lengths are, the Lankavatara Sutra is a very clear example that it just comes to mind. The Lankavatara is a discussion between about to be fully enlightened Bodhisattva and the Buddha, going back and forth on issues of the teachings. And this issue and this teaching becomes well known in popular culture through other sayings. Some of you are into the martial arts, you may know Bruce Lee. One of his famous moments in his films is the finger in the moon analogy. It comes from the Lankavatara. Actually, it comes from even earlier sutras than that, but in the Lankavatara, it's really nailed down. No pun intended. What happens is that at one point, well into the Lankavatara Sutra, this Bodhisattva is asking almost the same exact question over and over and over again, but phrasing it a little differently. When you say this, do you mean da-da-da-da? Oh, and then Buddha answers, and then he says, well, when you say that, do you mean da-da-da-da? And it just, you know, it's incredible how we humans use language. We forget, and I think this is a feature of we modern people especially, but I think throughout history, humans have always used language in order to conceive or transfer information conceptually about some thing, some behavior, some whatever. And we know this. We know this because for some reason it takes dozens, hundreds, thousands of words to describe a simple concept. Novels are written to teach people about betrayal, trust, love, all sorts of human engagements with other, right? We're really planted in this duality. So why is it when we study something, instead of looking at the sentences and paragraphs and pages of information to then stop and go, I think I see where this is going. Some of us, for some reason, say, okay, he said this instead of that. Okay, so is he saying or is she saying that this, da, 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 or that this, da, da, da. And she used the word that, she used the word perspicacious instead of like concerned. So that means something different, right? So that changes the whole meaning of why this person is doing that person. And now, Shakyamuni Buddha was teaching a universal teaching to people who didn't have necessarily, some had very elevated language. Remember, India was a caste system. So there were people who couldn't read and write. So he Buddha was teaching a universal teaching for all people to attain Buddhahood in their lifetime, in this moment. So he didn't want to teach it in highfalutin language. He wanted to teach it in the language of the people so that everybody could get access to this knowledge. So, of course, he spoke in a lot of fables and made up stories and all sorts of constructs of words, you know, like stories and novels, to lead people, ignorant people, to understand, ah, I see what you're talking about, or I've experienced that, I know what that is, right? So he constantly was telling people, do not get hung up on the words, especially since this is how he taught his students and disciples, was to recite the words over and over and over again every day. And this is how they taught themselves the sermons, right? So there was nothing written down when he was teaching. It was all word of mouth, which is, memorization is a great way to learn, but it's also rife with the trap that because you focus on memorizing, the words become so important to you. Important. But that the words are only important in the sense that they get you to the meaning. Don't forget to go to the meaning. Don't get hung up on the words. Well, the Lankavatara Sutra is a dialogue of, some say, 108 questions, and relates to the 108 Bs. 108 shows up a lot in all kinds of practices, not just Buddhism. There's something about that number. But again, that's an aside. See, that's words getting in the way. The meaning in the Lotus Sutra is this very educated, very perspicacious bodhisattva wanting to understand, but getting hung up so much on the verbiage and the word construction that he's not backing up far enough to see the big picture, see the meaning. And the Buddha kind of gets irritated with him. He says, look, you need to stop getting hung up on the exact words of every phrase and every sentence in what I'm saying. Try to perceive the meaning. That is all that matters. It is like, and here's the cliche, it is like you're staring at, it is like a finger pointing at the moon. If all you do is focus on the finger, you will never see the glory of the planetary universe, the moon. You'll never get it. You'll be so stuck here on the finger, you'll never even think to look at what it's pointing to, the meaning. Okay, now I had to bring that up because that very simple little saying describes the relationship of the Buddhist teachings in their entirety to the small early group that we term Hinayana. Now, I take that as an insult. The Theravadas really don't like being talked to or considered to be Hinayana, small vehicle. Well, there's good reason for that. They're stuck on those words. And I will show you that although that may seem like a small thing or an annoyance, I will show you what it can turn into. Just as this scholar in this book, Mr. Bean, or Ben, B-E-N-N, probably Ben, demonstrates that in the 23rd chapter of the Lotus Sutra, there's a story, an elaborate story, of, I'm fond of reading the early translation of the Lotus Sutra by, H. Kern. But one of the difficulties in it is the naming convention, the Indian naming convention of these personalities that are invented for the story, like the Medicine King Bodhisattva. in this more current or later translation, the previous lives of Medicine King Bodhisattva is a story of dedication. Now, I'm not right now. I'm going to do this later, but right now, because my subject is the burning monk, what I want to point out to you is that's a story, like so many stories in the teachings, that illustrates something. All right. And in this story, there's this particular personage, what he does is he sets fire to himself as a statement of release from attachment to his earthly body, his dedication to discovering Buddhahood, and he does it by just burning his body, just self-immolation, which itself is not unique to Buddhism. There's a lot. I mean, look at Jesus Christ on the cross. There's a lot of immolation in religions, but Buddhism isn't like that. Although when it's practiced like this, it becomes a religion. Oh, this is so terrible. Should have marked this better. I'm sorry for the long pause. It says it directly. Maybe it says it more clearly. I just read this and I saw it just bowled me over that the preamble to the Lotus Sutra, and it's not only in this Lotus Sutra. He's mentioned before that he teaches in skillful means or skillful devices. What he's talking about every time is how, again, about the words, all these stories and everything, they're not real things. They're not truth. They're devices to help you understand. And it's not until the Lotus Sutra that he gets down to business and says, now look, this is the only truth. This is the one vehicle. This is the way to enlighten yourself right now as a Buddha, as a Buddha mind, to communicate with your Buddha nature right now. This is the only way to do it. All the rest of this, even the Lotus Sutra and its stories, are skillful means. They're not it. It, and I will tell you what it is, because a lot of people say it's not in here, and again, they're stuck on the words. But to me, if you're stuck on the words, then read them. Now I'm frustrated. Anyway, he gets done with this whole story of this Bodhisattva burning himself and all this history about him and doing this blah, 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 blah. But then he goes right into this over and over and over again, and this is why I'm not finding a particular moment. He ends, you know, with all the benefits this guy thinks he's going to get by doing all this. And here's the example. He shows, you know, even if you went to this extreme of self-denial of your body, and he's talking about the Hinayana, because he's mentioning the Shravakas, the disciples, and the Pratyeka Buddhas, the Arhats, and he's saying, you can go as far as all of this, and yet, and I wish I could find the exact verbiage in here because it would knock you down, but you're going to read this book, right? He has taught and transformed us, but now he has burned off his arms. His body is incomplete. This then, seen with joy by all the living Bodhisattva, made a vow in a great assembly, saying, Having thrown away both my arms, I certainly will obtain Buddha's golden body. If this be true and not false, let both my arms be restored, and they're magically restored. This is an elaborate story, all right? At that moment, the entire world trembled and shook. Body of Mary, six ways, treasure, flower, rain down from heaven, and heaven and human and heavenly beings all attained something they had never had before. The Buddha said to Constellation King Flower Bodhisattva, "What do you think? I is seen with joy by all the living bodhisattvas, somehow unknown foreigner. He is the present medicine king bodhisattva. He has thrown away his body as an offering in this way innumerable hundreds of thousands of billions of myriads of times. Constellation King Flower, if anyone aspiring for and seeking a supreme awakening burns the fingers of his hands or even a toe of his foot as an offering to the Buddha stupa, he will surpass someone who makes offerings with lands, towns, wives, children, mountains." So they're all talking about the merit of doing this, right? And then, even if someone were to give a 3,000 greatfold, thousandfold world full of the seven precious materials as offering to the Buddha, great bodhisattvas, pratyeka Buddhas, and arhats, the blessings such as a person would gain would not equal those of someone who receives and embraces even a single four-line verse of this Dharma Flower Sutra. Happiness greater than this won't be found. Now, is that direct enough? Do I need to read that again? After this whole rigmarole of lifetimes of burning his body, now this guy burns his arms and they come back when he appeals to the great bodhisattva, blah, blah, blah. And he gains all this merit, you know, for doing this, blah, blah, blah. In the very next sentence, he says, even if someone were to even outdo that and give 3,000 great thousandfold world full of even the seven precious materials as an offering to the Buddha, great bodhisattvas, he's talking to the audience now, you bodhisattvas, you pratyeka Buddhas, you arhats, the blessings such as a person would gain from all of that, burning yourself to a crisp, giving thousands of jewels, inconceivable gifts to the Buddha, they would not equal those of someone who receives and embraces even a single four-line verse of the Lotus Sutra. And he goes on, for example, blah, 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 just blah, 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 blah. And he goes on and on about all these different offerings, blah, 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 blah. Just as Shravakas who have entered the way, Shravakas who will return to the world only once more, Shravakas who do not have to return to the world, all of the things that they believe, the mystical stories and everything else, Shravakas, disciples who are arhats, pratyeka Buddhas, first among all the common people, so too this sutra is first and foremost among all the various sutras preached by the Tathagatas, preached by Bodhisattvas, or preached by Shravakas. So too, those who receive and embrace this sutra are first among all the living. Among all the Shravakas and Pratyeka Buddhas, Bodhisattvas are first. So too, with this sutra, among all the sutra teachings, it is first. As the Buddha is king of the Dharma, so too this sutra is king of all sutras. Constellation King Flower, this sutra can liberate all the living. This sutra can enable all living beings to be free from pain and suffering. This sutra can bring great and abundant benefit to all living and fulfill their hopes. If, again, he's repeating, if anyone hearing this Dharma Flower Sutra, the Lotus Sutra, either copies it themselves or causes others to copy it, the number of blessings from doing that will be so great that they could not be calculated even with the wisdom of a Buddha. If anyone copies the rolls of this sutra and makes offerings to them with flowers, fragrances, garlands, incense for burning, powdered incense, paste incense, banners, canopies, robes, or various kinds of lamps such as clarified butter lamps, oil lamps, lamps of various fragrant oils, lamps of gardenia oil, lamps of sumana oil, on and on and on and on. The blessings obtained will also be innumerable. So now you kind of see where the practice of the candles and the bell and the altar, it's all based on these offerings. And it just goes on and on and on. My point is, he's not vague about this. The sutras are not vague about this. This is not up to interpretation. He gives you this story of intense sacrifice. And then the very next sentence he goes, but that's not necessary. In fact, that's kind of insulting. All you have to do is intone the title of this one word, he says. As long as your attitude is critical in Buddhism, as long as you understand the sutra, understand its meaning, and you're able to take a phrase out of it and hold on to it as, you don't have to memorize, you don't even have to memorize the whole sutra, just get one phrase out of it that for you encapsulates the meaning of this whole teaching, all of it, just in one phrase. If you can just hang on to that, write it down, chant it, intone it, your ability to attain Buddhahood will be so immediate and so amazing that it will go far beyond in merit any of these other insane practices. Do you see the point that he's making? He's telling people that are like stuck in rituals and words and wanting to, you know, perform sacrifices and just strange human behavior in order to get to Buddhahood. It's not necessary. It's actually kind of stupid, because this is all you need to do. Chant Myoho Renge Kyo. Or as we dedicate ourselves to that, Namu Myoho Renge Kyo. But Myoho Renge Kyo, that is it. That contains all of my teachings. That it contains all that you need to know to focus, vibrate, hear, see, smell, contain, experience in this human body, the Buddha mind. Every time you do it. Now, when you stop doing it, your human mind is going to start flooding right back in. But for that moment, and however long you can contain that moment to continue in samsara, you will know what Buddha mind is right now. You don't have to burn your body. You don't have to cut off fingers. There's no sacrifice required, only determination. So do you see how utterly lamentable it is that there are Buddhists out there to this day, Hinayanas in Vietnam in 1969, who will go through this whole ritual that's described in this story and burn themselves while they recite that very sutra, that very chapter that says, I'm an idiot. I don't need to do this. All I need to do is intone one sentence, one word of this sutra. Hello? Why are you doing this? It's unfathomable. But this is what human beings do. And you know, we live in the latter age, Mapo. We live in the age of the decrease of the meaning, the teaching of the meaning of Buddhism. And people seem to be returning. Now, this story in this newer take by Mr. Ben is strictly written on Chinese Buddhist sects at the time. But we can see that, I mean, it wasn't just an aberration in medieval times when a lot of ritual and weirdness was going on. But that it continues into the modern era. that people, I'm sorry, I have to say, people calling themselves Buddhists who maybe have practiced for decades still don't get it, and they burn themselves in the street? Or that group of monks that, I'm sorry, I don't want to have disdain for my brethren. Practicing Buddhism takes effort, and I appreciate that. But if your efforts are so distorted that you're going to go kill the Rohingya in Myanmar, believe me, I'm not one of those who espouses that Buddhists are pacifists. We certainly have a pacifistic nature because of compassion, because we understand this is all suffering for everyone. So some people are suffering and do stupid things while they're suffering, but we're supposed to be able to conquer that, to get above that. We're still humans. We'll make mistakes. I make mistakes. I'm regretful for them, but I use them as tools to promote or to motivate me to chant more, to connect more with my Buddha mind. When I'm away from it for too long, I can trip up. But for me to pick up a weapon and go out and hunt people down, I would have to feel not just that my life is in danger, because that's not justifiable. My life is just another dream. But if the lives of all of those I know around me, not necessarily relatives, but just people in general, getting slaughtered for some strange reason, I would have to intervene. I would have to get involved in stopping that just because it's so destructive. But it's a slippery slope, we might say. I kind of hate that expression, but seriously, if I were to go out and start, you know, let's say with a sword, and they're all fighting with swords, I go out there and I start breaking swords and stopping the battle, that's one thing. But if I suddenly turn around and go, okay, you're the bad guy, and you're the people I'm protecting, that's no longer Buddhist. Seriously, strictly speaking, I want them all to stop. I want the anger and the warring to stop, because everybody's a people. And potentially, not potentially, but they are all of Buddha mind. They are all Buddha. So the fact that they're killing each other is abhorrent. And if there is something I could do to stop that, then it's my responsibility to do so. And it may take some strength to do that, but at no point does it require me murdering. Do you see what I'm saying? It may happen, unfortunately, but I would have a hell of a lot to chant about. So it's not strictly pacifist, because a pacifist wouldn't get involved at all, correct? But it is a commitment to end conflict. That's Buddhist, because conflict results in negative karma for all of us. So those Buddhists who I can call Hinayana, who I can call misinformed and practicing incorrectly, and actually they're demonstrating a behavior that runs completely counter to Buddhist teachings, are actually a poison that is making Buddhism reflecting poorly on Buddhism. That's an incredibly bad cause, which is talked about by Shakyamuni. I still have compassion that they're doing something that needs to stop. Right? Because what they're doing is not life affirming. It's terrible. So I view those Buddhas, just, I want to, sorry, it makes me want to, it makes me incredibly sad that someone who would dedicate so much of their life studying the Buddhist teachings could somehow still have that, I don't know what karma that is, but somehow still have that poisoned idea that immolation is a path to Buddhahood, let alone the example that it sets. That's so ego-based. Do you understand? This is the problem with Hinayana. It's so self-involved. To those Theravadas out there who might be listening to this video, or Hinayanas who are furious with me right now for saying these things, I'm so deeply sorry that you're unable to see the wisdom in Buddha teachings. I'm sorry. If you feel motivated to talk to me, seriously talk to me, have a calm discussion about this, I'll listen. I want to talk to you. I want to know what you're dealing with. Please don't do this. Please don't do this. This is not the way. To those of you who are just curious about this, can you see how profound an issue this is? This is the nature of karma. And so, whether or not we're talking about actual immolation, all of us have certain behaviors that call to that, in depression, suicide, those kind of things. I've met so many girls who have scars from cutting themselves, issues about self. They're so powerful. So this isn't just about the burning monk. This is about how all of us do a little bit of that in some form. It's very hard to defeat, but you can defeat it. It is just an illusion. You can win over it. You can defeat it. And part of it is just stop looking at the minutiae. Look at the bigger picture. Go outside and listen to some birds. Look at the trees. Or if you're in a city, just the amazing energy of what surrounds you. Be amazed. Take time to be amazed by anything, something, an ant, a bee, the ocean, the flow of a river. Find something to be amazed by. That's much closer to Buddha mind than any of these other self-absorbed things. Oh, I think that's all I can muster to talk about this. And probably, without getting maudlin here, I just had to provide some information, some answer. If I've only tickled your curiosity, if I haven't gone into this deeply enough, if you want to know more, whatever the reason, please comment. Let me know what you want to hear, and I will do my best to answer any questions or help you through any difficulties you're having, okay? Sincerely. With great love and respect, I ask of you, take the time to send me a note. Doesn't have to be long. Okay. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo Namu. Myoho Renge Kyo Namu. Myoho. Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day. Oh my, humans are weird.